My name is Mark Schwain, and I'm on the teaching staff this summer, and I'm going to serve as this evening's moderator of the forum, and I'm flanked by two distinguished panelists. To my left, Jonathan Ferrick, who has been teaching this week, Glimpses of God, Global Studies, if you will, from Lutheran World Relief, comes to us from New York City. And he will be speaking very firmly to the question, does technology strengthen community? Subtitle, can the internet make us no longer strangers? In the negative. And to my right, from St. Olaf College, Jan Lagerquist, who is the head of the Para College there, and who teaches American church history, a veteran villager, and who will be speaking very firmly in the affirmative to get us started off. Pardon me?
Oh, I was giving my instruction.
That's right.
Okay, firmly.
Firmly. For those of you who haven't been to a Holden Forum before, I should explain that this is a time when the village considers complex, controversial ideas together. And the moderator's job is to see to it that everybody gets to have something to say if they wish, and to try to make a conversation out of what's said, getting people to address each other's concerns. We expect and welcome disagreement. And the ideal forum is one where everybody leaves with some ideas, some thoughts, some place that nobody expected to be when they all gathered together. So hopefully this will at least deepen understanding. If it doesn't change anyone's mind, that's fine, but at least one should see, I hope, more deeply into the issue. I'm a pretty ideal moderator for this topic, I think, because A, I'm fairly ignorant of technology. B, insofar as I have opinions on the topic, they're quite strong, but they're on both sides. And not only are they on both sides, but they're on both sides within any given 10-minute stretch of my typical day. So when I come into work, for instance, I'm the dean of a small honors college, and we have a symposium coming up that night. It's great to be able to say, well, let's remind all the students of this wonderful speaker, and my administrative assistant can simply type up a message and hit one button on which everybody is on an index for the Honors College, and everybody gets an announcement, and we probably boost attendance 20%. And that's great to be able to do that. And many other things like that. And I think, boy, this email and so forth is really helping to strengthen the community that is Christ College. And then I go from her office into mine, and I turn on my monitor, and it says, you have 180 email messages. And they will range all over the map from some listserv I've been put on that I didn't ask to be put on to some student who is in Latvia and would like a response right away about what text I'm going to be using in next semester's course on Tolstoy. And all 180 of those people, since they're on email, expect that they'll get an answer that day. And so my life has been made as a result of email and phone mail, in addition, of course, to what they call now snail mail, and other modes of communication, much more harried, much more frantic. And between the fax machine and the computer monitor and the secretary and the phones and the phone mail, I feel like I never catch my breath. And I don't think that is particularly community building. One more example. My faculty is thrilled and will, some of them, emerge from their offices of 4 hours of conversation with the eight people on the globe who are worried about the latest scholarship on St. Augustine's commentary on the creation stories in the last part of the Confessions, and are part of that community. But as a result of their 4 hour plunge into cyberspace with that community or network, I think it depends on your point of view here, what you call it, they've been not present to any one of us in the building. And similarly with the students who were exultant when they wired some of the residence halls for the computer stations and wired them into the university's mainframe and made all this stuff available to them. We find more and more of them now coming down to the dining hall and asking for food to go, or even if we won't provide it, taking their food up to their rooms and eating by themselves, but while they're plugged into God knows what network about what subspecialty, foreign cars, you name it. So that there's this paradox of having people plugged into real intentional communities of conversation, but that often happening at the expense of the sort of face-to-face people, whether that's faculty mingling in the halls and having open door policy office hours, or whether that's students who have forgotten the art of table conversation because they figured out a way to hold a hamburger in their left hand while manipulating a keyboard with their right. So I'm ambivalent, and I really genuinely do have very strong opinions about this on both sides at 5-minute intervals, and I'm eager to hear what our panelists and what the rest of you have to say on the subject. So without further ado, I think we'll start. Why don't we start positively? We'll start with Deanne, who will answer in the affirmative.
I thought we didn't do Holden Farms quite yet. How would we say this? In such a binary fashion.
Digital.
As I started to think about the way the question was posed, namely, can technology help build community? The first thing we should ask is, what are the barriers to community that we're trying to overcome that technology might be useful for? Or, frankly, what kind of barriers should some kind of communication overcome those barriers? It seems to me I came up with three. One is time. Having the time to be a part of a community is sometimes difficult. We're all on different schedules. Time is the one resource, of course, which we all get absolutely an equal amount of to start with, and it's absolutely limited. There's no extra minutes to be gotten. So one barrier to community is lack of time, or how we use our time. Another is distance. Or proximity, or location. Because I think of that not only as how big the globe is or how big the nation is, but simply being in different buildings can be something that works against community. In the particular case that I'm in, as director of an alternative BA program, we are not all the faculty and students are not housed in the same building, so that there are offices all across the campus. We don't just walk out into the hall and see each other. And then a third kind of barrier to community are all how shall I say this? I wrote it in my notes as animosity, but maybe there's another way to put it. All the difficulties that there are in communication, the sort of twitchy way someone talks, you know, that just bugs you. The old lumps in your relationship that maybe get in the way sometimes, so that someone's trying to tell you about what you need to do on such and such a project, and you're just thinking, I'm so angry still about da da da. So that there are psychological or personality things. The question is whether technology helps us with that, and we tend to think about technology immediately as electronic technology, but we should remember that a pencil is a tool. So writing a letter and putting it in the mail and expecting somebody to get it is a kind of technology, right? So too the phone, as Mark mentioned, that's a kind of technology. And so we ask, well, what's the difference between being on a party line and a private line? How does that change the dynamics of our community? How are the dynamics of our communities changed by having answering machines? When I finally allowed us how I might be willing to have an answering machine in our house, my brother immediately bought one for me and told not me, but my mother, that he thought this was a wonderful thing. He lives 40 miles from us, but it's long distance. He said, now I'm not always going to have to be calling Deanne back, because I would call and leave a message on his machine, and then on his nickel, he'd have to call back and listen to me plead for some favor. Just to set that in some context, when we talk about electronic communication, it's one of many kinds of technology. How does it help us get over those barriers? I have found that those three barriers I named can be surmounted by electronic communication in some ways. First of all, the one about time. Because electronic communication is, as they say, asynchronic, that is to say, you don't all have to do it at the same time, it allows me, for example, to do some of my work at very odd hours. Because we have a modem at home, I can do email at home at after my son is in bed, which means I can come home earlier in the day, make supper, be with my family, and then at 10 o'clock or 10:20 when the sports comes on, I don't watch sports, I can go upstairs and answer all those little messages from the student in Latvia who wants to know about next semester's course on Tolstoy, or read all the messages. One of the things we have at St. Olaf is a list, which is a bulletin board, you know? So I find out who has a car for sale and who needs to borrow a car seat, and you know, I can do all that stuff late at night. I don't have to do it at my productive hours. So it can help with time. It also helps just across time zones. My parents live in California. It's a big distance. I can have communication with them. I have friends who live on the East Coast or people who live further around the globe. It's not like the telephone, where in order to have exchange, we need to be in the same time zone, we have to be awake simultaneously. So, yes, I think it can help overcome the difficulties of time. Obviously, distance. That's the whole point of being connected. Now, people say, why are you sending email to the person who's next door to you? That's not a matter of distance, but it is a matter of time. Sometimes I do this, and Jim Farrell, whose office is next to mine, is coming on Saturday, and you know, sometimes I go and stand in his door and sort of stare at him to see whether I'm going to bug him or not by coming in and saying, Jim, are you willing to do this? Have you read this? Have you blah, blah, blah? I just send him a little email when it's the right time, then he reads it. But distance, this is obviously much easier to send mail, not snail mail, which takes a long time. I have a good friend who's teaching in Brazil, and there are periods of time when I'm in daily contact with him. I have no notion that he's in Brazil instead of in Chicago. Okay. Then the barrier of all those quirky personality things. It's no secret, I don't think I'm telling secrets out of school, that the department I teach in at St. Olaf is known for its difficult personality. And we have found that there are certain kinds of communication that go beautifully by electronic mail. Because you're not dealing with, do I need to look this person in the face? You just say, the meeting is at 2 o'clock. Or you say, get your letters in by Friday. You know, just do that real quick, fast, easy. The information is exchanged. The common project is advanced. I'm sure the underlying problems aren't solved, but they're also not exacerbated by simple exchange of information. I'm probably over my time. I just wanted to say, I think that there are certain things that this is particularly good for. I just want to say three things. I think electronic communication is particularly good for quick communication, and it reduces a certain amount of friction. Real friction, like trying to find an envelope, remembering someone's address, looking for a stamp, pressing the R response. It's done. I'm sure I hear from Mark Schwein much more quickly when I ask him a question because he only has to push R. He doesn't have to dictate a letter. The asynchronic thing I already said, I think it's particularly good when you're trying to do a kind of communication that doesn't take place in real time. And then also I think it's particularly good when the content, how should I say this, when the emotional level of the content is low. The more emotional or sensate the exchange is, the harder it is to do it by this form of communication. So.
Okay, thanks very much. Time, space, and quirkiness. Three barriers to community that these technologies can help to overcome. And now we hear from someone who deals with huge spaces, travels around the globe, and deals with people remote from one another, but who's going to basically give another perspective on technology and community. Jonathan?
Thank you. Unless you get the wrong impression, I have a computer on my desk, I use email, I spend a lot of time on the telephone, I actually work in a medium of communication, some of the time in video, and so I see these things as useful, but I see them very much as instruments and as things with which we supplement other much more important areas of life. And I personally have a lot of trouble even seeing the word technology in the same sentence as the word community. I think they have very little to do with each other, and in fact, technology, I think, is by and large a rather substantial and increasing impediment to community. And the reason I say that is because you never have just sort of a simple equation, technology plus community equals more community. It's always technology plus some kind of political economy plus community equals what? And I would say a big goose egg, a big zero. Because that political economy in our system is really market-driven technology. And I find market-driven technology to be elitist. I find it to be intrusive. And I find it to be destructive of community. What's the thing that everybody says about Holden when they come here that they appreciate the most? Right after the mountains.
Food.
No phone. No fax. And in the same breath, they like the community. They like the community spirit. I mean, for most of us Americans in this benighted culture, if I may say so on questions of community, Holden is an experience of community. And the first thing we think of when we talk about that is the lack of these impersonal intrusions, which bear no relation to the real struggle to be a community, and yet demand more and more of our time. So the intrusiveness, the elitism, who's on the internet anyway? People just like me. Actually, I'm a bit old now. I'm 47. I think if you're 20 to 35, that's who's on the internet. White males. The vast majority of surfers are white, young white, upper or middle class or upper middle class males. And it's a medium dominated by white people, white nations, and by males in many different ways. Destructive of community. Have you ever seen the chart of what's happened to volunteerism in this country? And have you ever heard the report of the Harvard researcher who tested the drop against every other variable that he could find and came up with only one that explained it? What it was? It was the increase in the watching of television. The precursor of what's going to happen to us through the internet, when that cable into your home will not just be a handy medium of communication, but will be the channel that brings into your home all of the garbage of television, this beast which has gutted us from learning how to be with each other and from spending time with each other, and killing off that lifeblood of community, which is volunteerism. And I mentioned TV, and I ask you to accept this example, Mr. Moderator, because it is the precursor of what's going to happen through the internet. The internet is starting to move, it's starting to make noise, and it's very soon going to be that 500-channel universe that is supposed to solve all of our problems on this earth. The destructive of community also applies internationally. Because by the same token, with mass media and what they do overseas, our biggest export is our culture. And we're busy wiring the world for the internet. The world is getting wired, whether we like it or not, for that. And our culture is going to find new ways to fly out there and have an impact on other people's lives. And it's not a phenomenon that brings peace, that brings understanding, that brings community at all. What it does is it brings more and more people into that phenomenon of experiencing media that are made to sell things to you. Programs are a way to deliver you to the advertiser, just like the cigarette companies think of cigarettes as a way to deliver nicotine to you. And the internet is going to be the channel for that. It's already going in that direction. And when we look at the internet versus community, we have to think about who does it serve? What powers are served by that medium? And we go in the directions of the big media that are already there. There's some hope that small people can speak out, like the people in Beijing during the Tiananmen uprising in 1989. They used faxes to speak out and get their story out. There's hope in that light, I have to say. But is that community building in a very, very sort of special and occasional sense, perhaps? But here, too, there are enormous technological barriers. There are more telephone lines in the country of the Netherlands, which is as big as your fingernail, as there are in all of Africa. And if we think Africa is going to join the world through the internet, the way Bill Clinton seemed to think that every school child will do, we better look a little bit at the hardware involved and the investment involved and the things that shape power and communication in a world like ours. My final point would be that if technology had anything whatsoever to do with community, the Christ of community, the Christ who would form us into the body of Christ and make us into the community on earth which somehow reflects him and gives us a foretaste of heaven, he would have waited until it had been here before he would have come. But for three quarters of human history, there was virtually no technology in the church except the handwritten book, not even Gutenberg until the 1500s. And the early church, which we think of as the model of community, where there was sharing, where there was holding of things in common, was long before, of course, anything of what we're speaking about today. And finally, in this backwater of Microsoft, I'd just like to remind you that the key verse for Martin Luther was, "By grace are you saved through faith." It wasn't, "By gates are you saved."
Jonathan, I just want to know, when you go to Europe, do you sail? Do you ride a mule into Manhattan every day?
Well, that's technology.
Just like Jesus?
That's technology. Okay.
I'm sorry, it was just too easy.
I want to thank our panelists for taking strong positions. I urge them to, I'm responsible for the binary character of their opening remarks because I think that helps to sharpen the initial differences to create the space for you to nuance them or challenge them or dive in with your own stories and anecdotes about how community has been strengthened or destroyed by these kinds of technologies. We're focusing, I think, mainly tonight on information technologies. So let's try to draw most of our examples, thoughts, views from those. So the floor is open.
Are we speaking of community in a large sense of all community or community in particular as the church?
Either.
But I think we gotta be careful about that. If you get too easy with the definition of community, then it's all fine, you know.
Right.
Those cyber faculty meetings, is that a community? You know?
Well, it's closer than our real faculty. In this particular case, Jonathan, yes.
That sounds like a more interesting form, maybe.
Right.
Well, does it mean if you don't have a computer, you don't even know what you're hardly talking about, that those of us that don't have one are going to be just left hanging in the wind or something?
Exactly. You're not
real. Because I don't even know what a binary or what it was you were talking about.
Binary. That's just yes,
no. Sharp, two sides.
Yes,
no.
As though
things have just two sides, not...
Computers work like that. They only have two sides, zeros and ones.
Okay, well, that's why I knew there was something. Yeah. But I just wonder if it's kind of like it was with the horse and buggies, if I'm going to be back in the horse and buggy with the technology. And that kind of worries me a little bit.
No, I think that that's the... I'm sitting here thinking about some Amish communities where what they've done about telephones is they have a public phone. And so they haven't not had telephones. They have a public phone, which everyone goes to. But the reason I raised that in response to your question is that I think it's really something that's part of this struggle to figure out what to do with it. It's...
Well, I think a phone is easier to learn how to use than a computer.
Right.
So...
It's a very good point, because it does raise, again, the issue, your question, really, that I think was your point, that we need to ask who's included and excluded by definition in these networks or communities or whatever you want to call them, due to the exorbitant learning curve it's taking to operate some of these things and the exorbitant expense that it's taking to buy the hardware. I just ordered, before I left here, new computers for all of my faculty and staff, and printers to network them and network these machines to the printers at a cost of $42,000. And 3 years ago, I got everybody new computers and was told and believed this is the last thing we're going to need for the next 10 years. But in order to network us to somebody else who has this to that, Galileo, library, World Wide Web, and so on. So anybody who says, boy, technology is really cheap, you can tell them that's false. And that immediately excludes lots of people.
By the way, I'd like Mark to be on my side of this argument.
the trend in computer prices, though, is the more the time has gone by, the cost of personal computers has gone down. I think it will continue to go down. There's always that buying the newest thing, piece of hardware to keep up, but... I have a computer that costs less than $1,000, and I bought it 4 years ago, and I can do just about anything on it. But I think the price will go down. Whether it will be available to everybody in 10 years, who's to say? Mm-hmm. It's technology has always been a double-edged sword, all the way back. But what I've seen with history is there's a lot of good that comes out of a lot of technology, but there's always bad stuff that comes along with it. And the computer will be there. And so I think it's, as a community, it's kind of up to the community. Just like as an individual, it's up to the individual how to use that technology for good or responsibly. The automobile really messed things up as for communities. But it also did some good things. Technology, we can grow more food on an acre of land now than we ever could with the technology that we have. The computerized technology that we have, fertilizing acreage and things, is good.
So here's some others who think, as this gentleman does, that the information technologies that we've mentioned really are two-edged swords, and it depends upon the quality of the communities that wield the swords, which side they're going to cut with. Can be sources for strengthening or can be sources for destroying, depending upon the user, not the tool.
I help teach a continuing education class for masters and with computers, and the last thing I say when we're done is that when you look at the amount of time you spend on the computer, it better be a greater percentage that you spend in relationship with people than you do with your computer. And it's easy to get caught up in how do I do this and how do I make my time better used, but you actually spend more time the first time around learning it than you would have if you had done it the old way, of course. But when you spend more time with that computer than you do with people, that's kind of the quotient I come up with to draw the line.
How well have you been able to hold out?
At first, horribly. At first, I was putting all the effort and time into making this a useful tool. And as things have progressed, it has become much easier to, that the tool works well now. And now I have all the resources available to work, spend more time with people.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say we could apply that, I mean, talk about pastors in particular. Would you say the same thing? Should a pastor spend, how much time should you spend reading books? You'd read a book by yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You look at a computer by yourself. I certainly wouldn't argue that you should give up all books in favor of computers, but there is a certain analogy in that both are sources of information, and sure, probably reading a book doesn't give you the same response. Now, I'm a historian, and I always say to my students, I spend a lot of time with dead people, and they don't talk back to me in the same way that a connection across the internet can talk back. But I'm a little reluctant to make that analogy, that, I mean, not to say there are other things that we do solitarily. No. So they're in there for 4 hours reading the listserv on Augustine. They could be in there for 4 hours reading journals.
Fair enough. Yes.
Can I say one thing that I think it's pretty much human history? When we come across a new method, a new medium of communication, it usually starts out going very good, but then as we get used to it, our kind of values start to slide. And I can think of very much so would be the invention of the television, for instance. That turned out, I mean, when they first came on the air, we had a lot of shows, and then back in 1950s, I Love Lucy, 7 years, was clean show, very good sense of humor, What's My Line, Honeymooners, all of those were very good, but then eventually you start to slide, and eventually, like they say right now, back in the 60s, even the Addams Family had too much sex in it, and that's why they cut the show. But as compared to today, that's the cleaner, one of the cleanest shows on television, you know? And so you realize how our society slid. Same thing with the music video. It started out with Michael Jackson, all the dancing, and it was very good and creative. And then we got Madonna into the scene, and it brought everything right into the ground. And it could be the same thing with computers. The invention is great at first, but now, as time goes on, it could go ahead and eventually start heading into the ground itself.
Well, I think there's a distinction to be made there on television as a mass media that's marketed by a particular industry as opposed to the use of the computer as an individual tool.
But the internet is going to go that way. The internet is going to combine them all.
The internet as a web content page-based item will tend to move that direction. There is the economic, you know, interests involved. Some of the other uses of the internet, whether it's use groups or whether it's university type,
that's the difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that I'd like to stay on this point a minute, because it your point that you just made, it echoes one of them that Jonathan made. Let's assume for a moment that the two-edged sword metaphor is apropos here, and that it really depends on the user. Mm-hmm. Still, if we're to take television and the history of television as any kind of source of assurance that we're going to manage this new technology very well, it is kind of despairing, isn't it? I mean, when we think about the history of television, which you began to summarize, if that is the kind of nearest we can come to how we're going to manage over the long run with the internet, for those who are pro-technology and information technology, give us some reason why we should be optimistic about the internet given the history of television. Yes, here's a gentleman.
Well, the television is a very passive piece of way of communication. It's one way. Internet, I don't know about community, it's an excellent tool for communicating. I work with a fellow who lives in a city 45 miles away. We send technical information and email back and forth on a daily basis. We don't ever talk about what a wonderful email session we have. One thing we really enjoy is we get together once a week and talk about what's going on. if we didn't get together, we probably would stop working together. So as far as a community aspect, if you can call it that, I don't think the internet is worth a damn. It's a good way to send technical information and information back and forth, but that doesn't make a community information. If I don't see his twitches when he talks, I don't really know him. So if I don't see his twitches, even though they're irritating, he's trying to quit.
Okay.
Well, the other thing that you're pointing us to is that television is entirely a push medium. You know, you turn it on and it's there. But you don't get any manipulation of what's there. Even on a web page where there's ads, there's much more pull that we get to decide what we want. You look at that page or you don't look at that page. You follow this link or you don't follow that link. It's not in your face quite as much. And one of the other issues is about how it gets paid for. That the television is paid for entirely by the senders. Where I am and where you are, we don't pay for that access because at a university you get it in a different way. It's an interesting piece I read some time ago now about the parallel between the development of a government, of a reliable postal system and email. And the way that the postal system started and the receiver had to pay for the letters. And it made you feel differently about getting mail than if the sender pays for the message. So I think that's one of the issues that we don't quite know yet about this electronic stuff is who's paying for it? How does who's paying for it and in what way they're paying for it matter? My family, aside from me, because I'm at a university, but my brothers and my parents use an email provider that's free. And I don't know where they got it, but they don't pay for the service. They have to pay for the hardware and so forth. Mm-hmm. That's different, gives them different kind of access. But the money's, I think Jonathan's quite right, the money is important to follow where it comes. But it's not just one way. And we don't know where that's going to go. So I would argue one of the things that's really important about this electronic communication is for people in the church to figure out how we're going to use it and how we can be brokers of it or mediators of it. So when Nona says, I don't have a computer, well, maybe that's one of the things the congregation thinks about. Should we be providing an access point for people in our congregation?
We're talking about the same organization that just moved from ditto machines to copiers for the last 10 years.
Well, I can do old files in my office, and I think the stuff people send on email now, they used to put on ditto masters.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes?
In terms of congregational stuff, I think a really helpful thing, something I'm on, is LoserLink or AccuNet.
LoserLink.
It's one of the least reliable.
Thank you, Jonathan, that was very good.
Sorry.
And but which is not a web. It's not a website thing. It's only an email server, and it connects with all its larger Presbyterian and Lutheran, but. It's wonderful because it's what Deanne's talking about. It's a limited access service for specific purpose. And I found it to be very, I don't know if anybody else is online, but I found it to be very beneficial in terms of connecting. I go online with that every day, and it just in the couple meetings I'm in or in the, you know, personal, I get at least one thing every day that's immediately valuable for my congregation and my ministry in that congregation, or to sort of bring Jonathan's issues into the positive light for one moment. We also get, because the ELCA is very good about porting over emergency message from LWR or from the ELCA disaster office, you know, so I can go online Sunday morning and find out, for example, in what was going on in Grand Forks or what has happened in Africa overnight, take it to my congregation that morning, have an offering, get the word out, sign a petition, you know, whatever we need to do that day. And I think that's a very healthy community building use for congregations, but it's very limited when you talk about the whole scheme of the internet.
That's sort of the churchly equivalent of what you do. It's good for data back and forth with your buddy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good for data. The internet's great for data, but data is not community.
That's right.
But
yes.
Actually, he's not. He's human.
Okay.
No, in the green. Oh.
I was just wanted to go back to the television. It's the same thing. It's a double-edged sword. There's good things on TV, and they're available to everyone. There's things I never would have known if I didn't watch the Discovery Channel. It's a personal choice. I don't have to sign up for the Playboy Channel. You know, it's just, it goes back to the same thing. And when it's all combined with the internet and television and telephone and everything's digital, it's just back to, again, back to that sort.
Yes.
I kind of feel like that's one of the big values that people find in these things is speed and efficiency. And I speed enough just physically myself, and I sort of am opposed to things that speed us up. And I think things can work. You know, I don't think we have to find things out immediately. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think I'm opposed to microwaves because they speed up our cooking. I mean, we can wait. And I do fly airplanes, so I'm not like, you know, I'm not pure about this, but, you know, I think I'd rather work at things that slow us down than work at things that speed us up.
One thing that I heard is a new dimension of possibly within the nursing home system. There is a nursing home that's set up like an email within the nursing home or an internet network where they can get on typewriter and type notes to one another across down the hall and all, which I think is really super beneficial because when I worked in the nurses, as a nurse's aide in the nursing home, I found that a lot of the people felt so disconnected. They were just really totally depressed. And just having a computer available would be absolutely ideal in terms of offering effective communication, really uplifting spirits.
One of the things that's very interesting at where I am, we at CINAHL, we use electronic mail a lot. You have to be on or you don't know what's going on campus. But there's a kind of a curve. The people who were doing it long before the school said you had to, and then there were those of us who sort of figured it out. And then there's this trail, you know, of people who don't really want to do it. Very often those people start learning how to use electronic mail when they have kids who go away to college. Mm-hmm. So I just want to offer that up as a reminder that, yeah, data communicating information is really a big thing. But people use this a lot like you would use a letter. And people write more, and they write more often than they would otherwise do.
Sure. Now I wanted to come back to some of Ian's opening remarks. They kind of surprised me because I thought you were going to be on the affirmative rather than the negative. If we think about things like temporality and distance and having to live with the animosity or quirks of others, and to say that isn't it wonderful in the way the internet and technology does away with that, and that seems to be very dehumanizing. That notion to say, isn't it wonderful, now I don't have to live in real time. Isn't it wonderful? Now I don't have to cope with real distance. Isn't it wonderful? Now I don't have to be face to face with real people. Wow. That's a positive? That's a plus?
I'm a very strong Myers-Briggs eye. Mm-hmm. I'm a very strong Myers-Briggs eye.
The other part you raised with that was that kind of the quirkiness of people. I read into that kind of how sometimes we prejudge people by appearance. Some of the ability to write back and forth and to chat based upon our language rather than appearance maybe frees us from that a little bit. It's not as personal, of course, in any sense, but we can talk to people who we may have written off before because of how they look, and now we've given them an hour of time and learned a lot more about them in that way.
may I come back? I mean, let me push my point a little harder here. And that's, I mean, I find this, the metaphor of a two-edged sword very interesting in the sense of most people use swords for killing. I mean, it's a weapon. I'm not particularly sure that might be the best metaphor if you want to talk about these things positively. But to push this, I think what that means is technology is not a benign nor neutral instrument. That I think technology, if it is an ology and a way of doing and understanding things, it has values, it has particular ways of being that are going to shape our understanding of what it means to be human and what it means to be community. And so therefore, the understandings of technology are going to change those kinds of values and the things we understand in terms of human and those kinds of things that we understand in technology. And I don't think, I think we are very naive and deluded if we think that this is just simply another neutral instrument and it all depends on the way you use it. But that already to put things in terms of categories of use and utility and instrumental ways of thinking and those kinds of understandings of value already at that point become intensely important about the way we think about humans and community. And I think we need to think about that very seriously.
I'd like to make a comment about community, if you're done, because I think it tags onto that. I don't believe that we as humans will ever lose our need to be a community. I think it will take on different forms, and we will have to move to different ways of finding our community. But when you watch small children, they pack, watch them out here, they pack together. That's just born into us to find like kind. So I think technology, or whatever you want to call it, is going to give us a little hiccup along the way. We'll have to figure out how to be a community, but I can't imagine we as human beings not wanting to connect with each other.
Now let me ask you this, just to draw you out a bit. Are you suggesting, when you use the word community that way, a kind of irreducible face-to-faceness to community, or are you prepared to say that community could be a group of people who simply exchange information via electronic media?
No, I think community is where you find yourself and other people, and your comfort level depends on your relationship with those people, and it can be in any of those places.
So it needn't be a face-to-faceness then?
I don't think it needs to be, no. But I guess I'm saying we don't know what form it will take.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it's never been missing.
And you're saying that if the
of history, and I don't believe technology is going to do away with it. I think we will find out in our own selves how we adapt to that.
And you're saying that technology forms us in a way that we should be alert to, and it may be deforming in the sense of it really does give us a new form of community. It may be a deformation given the particular technology we're discussing. That's your worry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have a worry.
Okay, you don't have a worry. Peter?
I think it needs to be face to face. I think that's the only way, at least speaking for myself. You know, my kids are at college, and I could write them letters as much as I want, but, I mean, you gotta be there, and you gotta see them, and you gotta feel them. I don't think there's anything, I don't think we need more data. I think we have too much data in our world.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons we're all up here is to get away from the speed and the data and the information. And I think what we really hunger for is Christian community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that only comes through being together, being compassionate, respecting each other.
I think you're talking about relationships.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Relationship, I think, is part of community. Mm-hmm. I think it's a big part of community. But you have to have a lot of different relationships, and then you have to have some glue that holds those relationships together. And I think one of the things that holds it together here is a similar Christian belief.
And then you have to act in ways corporately that respect both those beliefs and all the individuals. So, and I think, and I just have a little anecdote about the speed of data. One of the reasons I come up here is to get away from Westlaw and telephones and clients and all that kind of stuff. So Monday morning I walked in to the dining hall and I was, you know, barely half awake and I was putting a little oatmeal in my bowl. And Martin, without even knowing it, stood up and made an announcement that he'd just been listening to the radio. So he had up-to-date information. He was talking about one of my cases. So I was like, oh my gosh, I got to get back to Minneapolis and get to work. So it would have been much better off if he wouldn't have been listening to NPR and then reported it on a microphone. And so, I mean, that's how we don't even have, you know, anything but four-day mail here, and it's still that to me, almost instantaneously. Mm-hmm. We get stuff too fast for me.
We can make choices, though, as human beings, but we can't necessarily make choices for other people. But, you know.
What are you saying?
I'm saying you make that choice.
Which choice are you talking about?
What choice?
The choice he made to buy into what Martin had said.
What did you think Martin was lying to him?
You
make your choice whether that's going to affect your life or not.
To watch Discovery or subscribe to Playboy. How much is it, by the way?
Discovery.
Yes.
Discovery.
But don't you, I sometimes worry that, I think we've grown up in an age where we learn how to communicate with people face to face without having computers. But when you think about kids that start using computers when they're 6 years old, and if they're going to be communicating with people through email from the time they're in elementary school, it may be a kind of community, but I wonder what kind of community it's going to be, because they're never going to grow up, facing each other and having to work out all these problems face to face. So, to me, that's a concern. I think that's different than where we are now, using computers at this time in our life.
I think we don't have a computer, but I think it'd be good to keep in contact with people that you already know, but I would imagine it'd be very difficult to form new friendships just through the computer, because if you meet a person new, you communicate better. You have a face to it, their body language and everything else. I don't know, because we don't have a computer.
Go ahead, John.
I just wanted to say, along the lines of what Michael said a little while ago about the things that come with the technology, there's two questions of language with computer communication which are deeply troubling for the world as a whole. One is the predominance and the absolute oppression of English. Mm-hmm. To be on the web, the most resistant people to English in the world, the most resistant people are the French. Mm-hmm. But French scholars today have no choice but to publish in English if they want to get an international reputation. And our language is killing off, much like, a brand of corn that is developed by DeKalb can kill off, or a brand of cattle developed by some stud farm somewhere can kill off all kinds of cattle around the world. It's the sort of cultural equivalent of wiping out biodiversity. The second part of that is the language of programming. And if someone like Gates gets his way, we're going to all have no choice but to use his product to communicate with each other. And he's going to have a monopoly on something almost as universal as the air we breathe. And can that be licensed? Can that be somebody's property? I don't think so, but he might get away with it in the kind of climate we live in, where market forces married to technology are forcing these homogenizations on a world that God created with tremendous and wondrous diversity. Human language is one of the finest expressions of what it means to be made in the image of God, that we have 4,000 languages, and they're dying by the day under the pressure of some of these forces.
One thing that I wanted to bring up for a second is that, and I believe very much so, is that every time we meet somebody, upon meeting them face to face, when you study their character, their sense of presentation, you can always see a side of Christ, maybe from a slightly different angle from one person to another, but there is an image of Christ in everybody, and computers do not allow that access of seeing that image. The second thing I was going to say is that computers, at least from I guess it's virtual reality that I find is a new dimension of people and computers, where you receive headphones and you receive glasses, and it's like you're really there. I think in some ways, though, I mean, the beginnings have been wonderful in the sense that they have computerized and put into the program in this virtual reality where you can actually go and explore Venus, and you could take a day or two if you want to walk around that planet by way of just having glasses and sounds and sights and everything through this thing. The only thing is we can become so absorbed in that computer information that we just virtually lose all contact with other people and where we are and who we are. It becomes more or less your life.
I guess one of the things that we all recognize is that regardless of the outcome of this debate or any others about this, it's going to move forward, so maybe we should best learn how to get the most out of it. And if we can't see God in a silicon chip, I guess then we shouldn't be allowed to recognize beauty in a water wheel, which is also, quote, made by
a technology also, okay. Water wheel. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Well, I don't know. I'm a technocrat. I'm an engineer. And I think maybe I don't understand the word community. I'm afraid I came in a little late. I'm sorry. But I believe in what somebody said about the two-edged sword, or his comment, is I think the technology in itself is okay, but we still got to overlay it with some kind of value system, a humanistic value system. And that's what we're really talking about, if that's what you mean by community. And how you get those, and how you melt and marry those two elements, okay, there's a dichotomy there. And how you do it really takes some basic moral and ethical and humanistic value systems that you're going to have to layer upon that. Okay, now, who's going to do it, or how we're going to do it, whether we do it individually, whether we do it as a community, at this particular church, or some law, or whatever, it's going to have to be probably, it has to be well thought out, because the progress is going to continue. It's like he said, it's going to continue. to see your child, you know, they got television now. They can hook up the TV, your computer with the TV, and you can see your child. I mean, it's not, you can see how their facial expression they're going to be. That's no big problem. That the technology is there. So what we really, to me, it's really a matter of understanding that the technology is here, it's coming, but to be able to impart, I guess, a moral and ethical and humanistic value system upon it.
Let me just ask a question about the, in response to your statement and the one immediately preceding it. There is certainly a grain of more than a grain of truth in the fact that these technologies are inevitable, and kind of like a juggernaut, sooner or later most of us are going to be drawn into them. And I appreciate that truth. And I think what I fear most about the latest technologies is that I feel, I think for the first time, in a way that I never did with, say, the telephone or television, like I don't really have a choice in the matter. That is to say, take the issue of speed, which has been brought up a couple of times as being, at a certain point, dehumanizing. I have a lot of people now that I work with that expect instant turnarounds on things because there are fax machines, because there is email, because there is all kinds of things like that. I'm now kind of expected by people near and far to get back instantly, and there are various consequences if I don't. So I feel like I'm being drawn into the juggernaut there, sure, I could make a statement like Ricky did, which I would, that speed kills at a certain point in human relationships, but I'd be whistling in the dark. I mean, I don't think suddenly all these people are going to say, well, you're right, we'll make an exception. We sent you the fax today, you've got a week to return. No, they want that fax back the next day. A second thing would be, I just can't, being a dean and on the provost's index for this committee and on somebody else's index for that committee and on this or that listserv and so forth, it's very hard for me unilaterally to opt out of one or another of those and keep my job. Now, you'd say, well, you could quit your job and find another one. True, but at a certain point, I just fear that there's a kind of juggernaut character to this technology that even if some kind of humanistic control over it can be imagined, given that it's driven by capitalism, I'm kind of fearful that that's not going to be open to me to control, that I'm finally going to be controlled by it in a way that I haven't quite feared about any other technology before. I give you those two examples, but especially the speed one, which has already altered, frankly, the quality of my work and my general psyche. I'm much more strung out at the end of the day because of all the people who've wanted instant turnarounds than I ever have been before in the name of a technology that's supposed to save time and make me feel much more peaceful.
Amen.
Yes.
Well, I want to, you know, I think we have to talk about stress.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be interesting to, I don't know how to do it in a room like this, but, you know, how many people are suffering from stress-related maladies or have to be medicated now? I think there's a lot of us. And so the question is, what if it's a juggernaut that we're really not going to control, what are we going to do to find respite? And then, because it's almost close to the end of the hour and I won't have to listen to all the pain for very long minutes.
Well, part
the juggernaut is going to roll over Holden Village in 3 or 4 years. As soon as Teledesic or Motorola or the others put up their low orbit satellite, that necklace, then we have to figure out how to respond to the image of somebody sitting out there on the ark, and instead of talking to the person next to him, has a phone in their hand.
You have to do a metal detector at the end.
That's where you need that two-edged sword.
Well, that's a very good example, Martin. I mean, there's the juggernaut again.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me. Yes, Richard.
Well, I was thinking about, like, I think maybe some areas there still is room for choice. I mean, I understand, like, you know, what you're saying. But, like, our son Michael is at a school where they don't allow computers. Where most schools, you know, that's just a given. It's like, oh, boy, if you have, you know, how many computers can we have? They don't allow them, and they don't allow the kids to watch TV. And I think the kids are very rich for not having those things. And that's, so there, I think there's places where we can still kind of make choice that I think it's going to go away. That's just an example.
Well, I want to come back to this two-edged sword metaphor, because Michael's quite right. You have to be careful about what metaphor you choose, and I don't think I would choose that one. And I might think more of the biblical response to much different issues, that all things are lawful, but not all things are useful. And that's really our responsibility, is to figure out what's useful. And this is one that we're all kind of babes in the woods. So you say television and telephone, and maybe you remember the first time you saw a television, but I don't think you remember the first time you saw a telephone.
True.
So that you know, you're just kind of used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are starting to figure out ways to limit the telephone in our lives. I don't answer the telephone every time it rings at my house.
Mm-hmm.
I just leave it there. And we're learning that about, we have to learn that about other kinds of communication tools as well. What is the way we don't let them take over? Because for most of us who are engaged in work in certain marketplace arenas, they will be there. So the question is, how do you use them so that they're useful? I have students who don't read their email anymore, and so then we're sitting there trying to figure out, okay, now does this student read their email or not read their email?
I think we have time for one more remark, and you've been very patient, so I'm going to let you make the penultimate comment here.
I just want to make two comments. One is, I enjoy email because I can correspond with a foreign student that we had 10 years ago who lives in Uruguay, where mail may or may not get there. So that I like. The second thing, for 40 years I worked in a laboratory. When I first started, everything was done very labor intensively. You didn't get your report right away. If you were a doctor, you may have to wait till the next day. Now, all of the stuff that you do goes directly in the computer. You don't have to handwrite anything. It goes right up to the ward, so the doctor has immediate access. Yeah, it's a little more stressful in the lab. You don't get to talk to the doctors like you used to, which is unfortunate because you don't know about the patients like you used to. But on the other hand, maybe more lives are saved. So in that respect, I think speed, perhaps, in that particular area is important.
Thank you all for your comments and your stories. I think we've just begun the conversation. We certainly haven't come to anything like closure, but I do think that I certainly will leave here with a richer sense and a deeper sense of the problem. Whether I feel a lot cheerier about it, I don't know. I can't say that I do, but at least you've all helped me, and I think the rest of the people think through it more carefully. And so I hope you have a good night, and see you all tomorrow.
You can sign up for an email meeting at the door.